From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, yes, those special open lines. Here's what's happening. 3 days after a heavily armed Muslim couple who lived in a home investigators described as an IED factory, that's a bomb factory, burst into a Southern California office building, gunning down 14 people, the FBI has finally acknowledged that it's treating the case as an act of terrorism. In an unusual and brief address to reporters, at which the Attorney General Loretta Lynch appeared and questions were simply not taken. Meanwhile, Thai police have received a warning from Russia's state agency that 10 Syrians who may be linked to the Islamic State group ISIS could stage attacks in Thailand on targets associated with Russia and others opposed to those militants. Dr. Jerome Corsi with us. Jerry, first of all, your take on this situation now that the FBI is acknowledging that they are linked to terrorism.
Well, it's clear, George, that this is a terrorist attack. The links to Pakistan from the wife involved in the attack are now clear to Radical Mosque in Islamabad, from which she came, and also ties to Saudi Arabia. So I think it's going to be impossible to call this workplace violence, even though there may have been some workplace incidents involved and tension between the husband involved, this Saeed Farouk, and other workers. But the weapons, the heavily armed couple attacking the facility, I mean, this was clearly a terrorist attack, and the ISIS links, I think, are now unavoidable and have to be taken seriously into consideration even by the White House.
And Jerry, it looks like the investigation is targeting in on the woman, the wife of Farouk, that, you know, she may have pulled him into this entire situation. What do we know?
Well, it's very possible. I mean, there's clearly a radicalization that went on for Farouk, and we're at the very early stages of knowing about this. Also, George, there has to be a cell or a group of people affiliated or attached to this couple, and we're at the very early stages of knowing who they are. We're still learning, for instance, ties between the Paris terrorists and UK extremists. So we're going to see probably an international network here of terrorists connected on the internet and working through ISIS and various cells around the world, very possibly supporting this couple in San Bernardino. And over the next week, I think we're going to learn a lot more, and I'm convinced there are more than just these two terrorists involved in the San Bernardino attack.
Me too, and I think there are many of these little cells all over the place. Jerry, has anybody tried, I know we don't negotiate with terrorists, but is the FBI, is the government, Homeland Security, the president, is anybody trying to ascertain just what do these people want? What's the big issue here?
Well, I think the problem, George, for many of these radicals is that the demands are really demands against the Western civilization. I mean, this is the extreme problem of the most radical of the Islamics who become terrorists, is that they are not rational demands. They're not the kinds of things that can be negotiated. I think what's required right now is for, within Islam, there to be the kind of transformation, the speaking up of responsible forces within Islam to condemn this violence and to distinguish these terrorists from the legitimate religion. And those voices have to come forward. We need to have the kind of reformation in Islam that has occurred in other religions historically in order to isolate these extremists and make them such that they're not considered to be at the core of the religion.
I mean, years ago, the big issue was Israel and the Palestinians trying to find a homeland for the Palestinians, and that seemed to be a major issue with most Arabs in that region. That doesn't even seem to come up anymore.
Well, we're also seeing a historic migration. We're seeing coming out not just of Syria, but of the Middle East in general, these thousands and possibly hundreds of thousands of refugees. And many of these refugees are the younger men who are more easily radicalized. And, George, that's going to fundamentally transform Europe. It could transform the United States. if we begin bringing hundreds of thousands of these refugees into the United States, and I don't see any immediate end to the refugee problem, it looks like Russia is amping up the violence. Right now we've had massive Russia air attacks against ISIS targets. Russia's bringing in its most sophisticated tanks. It looks like Russia will go to a ground war in Syria against ISIS, and the violence is going to expand, which will exacerbate the refugee problem. So this is a massive new phenomenon of the expansion of Islam and possibly the expansion of radical Islam into Europe and the United States.
Okay, Jerry, thank you. Jerry Corsi. An Australian beer company owned by Saab Miller is recalling more than 1 million bottles of beer that could contain broken glass. The recall affects the Carlton Dry 355-milliliter bottles with the expiration dates of July 19th and 20th of next year. The beers produced in October by Carlton and United Breweries in Queensland are also marked with a 3 on the carton. Be very, very careful. Broken glass in beer bottles. Wall Street opened up higher on Friday after stronger than expected U.S. jobs data built the case for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates this month for the first time in nearly a decade. Let's check in with investment analyst Catherine Austin Fitz. Well, do you think the rates are going to go up, Catherine?
Oh, I give it 80% chance or better. It's been 7 years, George, since savers got any return on their money. You know, so the government and large corporations have been borrowing all of our money. And the reality is savers, pension funds, insurance companies, they need to start getting yield. So I think there's a very good chance that's going to happen. What Yellen has said is she's raising them unless there's a surprise between now and then. So we could always get a surprise. We have another 11 days before they finalize their meeting on December 15th and 16th. So savers are going to get a financial Santa Claus present.
What will a bump in interest rates do to housing?
Well, first of all, interest rates have already bumped this year. So if you look at the long treasury end, they're already up 40 basis points. On the short end, they're up 15 basis points, although most of that's in the last week anticipating the rise. So interest rates have been rising. But the reality is what the Fed is planning on doing or hopes to do is to bring them up gradually, probably a little bit each quarter. 25 basis points or a quarter 1% is very little. So this is going to be gradual, and the housing market should be able to be reasonably good coming into election, because if you look at the other policies they're doing with the federal credit, they're quite supportive of a aggressive housing market, number one. But number two, the capital flow into that sector through the stock market is usually able to handle 150 basis points a year historically. Even if you think the economy's weak, the Fed's not going to do it more than it looks like 1% a year is my guess. So I just don't think I think this is something we can digest.
Okay, Catherine, thanks so much. Catherine's website, Solari, SOLARI.com, is she's predicting an 80% chance of an interest rate hike this month. First time 7 and 8 years. Amazing. Well, here we go. Scientists are saying smoking cannabis, pot, can induce psychosis-like effects, similar to the symptoms people diagnosed with schizophrenia endure. A team of scientists at the Yale School of Medicine have found that the active ingredient in marijuana, Delta 9 THC, increases random neural activity, known as neural noise, in the brains of healthy drug users and increases schizophrenia. Richard Branson is finding a new use for an old Virgin Atlantic jumbo jetliner to fling the rockets to orbit. Virgin Galactic, the commercial space company founded by the billionaire, plans to send small rockets into flight from a Boeing 747-400, nicknamed the Cosmic Girl, that it purchased from Branson's airline. That'll be novel. Peter Davenport with us now from the National UFO Reporting Center with his weekly update on what people are seeing. Peter, what do we have?
Well, thank you, George, and good evening. I had a wonderful presentation prepared by 7 o'clock tonight. I was ready to go with that until the phone started ringing. So it's been a very busy night, and I'd like to close with a couple of really dramatic events that have happened across the United States just this evening.
All right.
But I'd like to start with Derry, New Hampshire, my old stomping grounds. I was just back there in mid-September for my 50th high school reunion. Wonderful place to live, home of Robert Frost, the poet, and Alan Shepard, our first astronaut in space.
Two great Americans.
Yeah. Last Saturday night, the 28th of November, gentleman writes that he was walking in the downtown area of Derry, saw a green, flickering, strobing ball of light on the other side of a factory from him. It quickly descended behind the factory, ran around the factory hoping to see it again to find out what it was, and it was gone by the time he got there. Unfortunately, an anonymous report, so we can't contact the individual and try to get more information about it. Two nights later, I think that makes it Monday of this week, Tucson, Arizona, woman was standing outside and saw four triangular lights in a single formation. She quickly realized that it was one object that was lying on its side, she thought. It suddenly righted itself and shot to the west. It slowed and did an instant turn to the south and went headed towards Mexico when she last saw it. Very interesting report, and that's posted to our website. The next night, Tuesday of this week, the 1st of December, husband and wife standing at their home in Blue Island, Illinois, which I think is just south of downtown Chicago, they report that they saw a cluster of cross-shaped objects with a solid blue light on top of them. They don't describe adequately for me to be able to describe them, but very, very dramatic sighting, according to what they said. Last night, woman driving on Interstate 40 out east of Albuquerque, very close to Edgewood. I think she was east of there, but she doesn't say exactly. She saw a very dramatic fireball. She quickly got on her telephone to her family who lived in Edgewood, and they saw the object, and it rattled their houses. All the animals stood up and started running around and barking and meowing and so on. I mention it, probably a meteor, but I mention it because something similar was seen shortly thereafter in Copperas Cove, Texas. Very dramatic sighting, and it's a long sighting, so I'll leave it to the Coast listeners to go to the website and read it if they're interested. But tonight, there was a very dramatic event over Seattle, seen from Vashon Island, from Ballard, from Sumner, and other points. It appears to have been some kind of fireball, maybe, again, like last night in Edgewood, New Mexico, might have been a meteor, except there was a similar report from Victoria, British Columbia. It's just north of the Olympic Peninsula in western Washington state. Very sane and sober-minded gentleman called and said he and his family were standing looking to the east out there, out of the through a picture window in their apartment, saw an orange object coming at them from the east. They saw it for 30 or 40 seconds, went right over their head. About 10 minutes later, they saw what they think was the same thing headed back east now, except this time it was bigger and brighter and faster. So a lot has been going on, and tonight's been really a very active night. If any of the Coast listeners have seen any of these objects tonight from all across the United States, we would welcome a written report, and we'll have them posted in the near future.
At Peter's website, which is UFOCenter.com. Up next, we talk about monster hunters and superheroes. Next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. We've got an exciting several hours for you. T. Krulos is a freelance writer and author. He's a regular contributor to publications such as River West Currents, M Magazine, 40 and Times, and the Shepherd Express. He's been published in a wide variety of other publications, and some of his favorite subjects to explore and write about include unusual subcultures, people, and places. He's written several books, Heroes in the Night and Monster Hunters, and here he is on Coast to Coast. T, I'm looking forward to this, T, to talk with you about this.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on the show.
So, do you like monster hunting or superheroes?
I like them both. They're both great hobbies.
How'd you start doing this?
Well, you know, I got started as a writer. I've had an interest for a long time. I used my first paycheck to buy an electric typewriter. I wrote for the high school newspaper. And I've had an interest in writing about art and music, but I've always had a special place in my heart for anything unique, unusual, or just plain weird. You know, I really consider those to be my people.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about superheroes first, and then we'll get into your latest work, Monster Hunters. Who, when you talk about superheroes, who are they exactly?
Right. Well, the topic of my book is real-life superheroes, and it's this subculture or movement of people, and they actually adopt their own superhero personas, and then they have a lot of different interpretations about what that means. So some of them do things like activist activities. They try to draw attention to themselves with their colorful personas. Some of them are more humanitarian. They do things like organize patrols handing out supplies to homeless people, stuff like that. And some of them actively want to try to fight crime, like in the comic books.
So these superheroes, the real superheroes, can't leap tall buildings in a single bound or anything like that, can they?
No, I mean, there's a few guys involved with that, but they're really kind of considered the fringe who say they have some sort of like psychic or voodoo powers. But most of them, the majority of them would say, hey, we're just regular people. We're trying to get out there and inspire other people to do good deeds. And that's what we're all about.
You've gone on some of the patrols with these superheroes. Tell me something that happened or something that just really caught your interest.
Yeah, well, I mean, I went on a lot of patrols, and a lot of times they're kind of slow. You walk around a lot, not much happens. A lot of times they're stopped by people on the street, want to have their picture taken with them. But for the most part, you know, I didn't see a lot. But I will tell you, I had the most frightening night of my life.
Uh-oh.
when I met some of these guys. I had kept hearing about a guy out in Seattle, Washington, who calls himself Phoenix Jones.
Phoenix Jones, okay.
Yeah, Phoenix Jones, he has like a full body sort of rubber costume. And a bulletproof, you know, some of his bulletproof armor.
Man, I don't know nowadays if you could look at somebody like that and think you're safe.
Yeah, exactly. And Phoenix Jones, he rolls with his own team. He has a whole team. They're called the Rain City Superhero Movement.
So they're well known out in Seattle.
Yeah, very well known. And I kept hearing stories about him. I heard that one night he stopped a guy from breaking into a car and stealing it. And, you know,
jeez.
I heard that he stopped a robbery, and I heard a story where he confronted a drug dealer and confiscated his drugs and threw him down a sewer drain.
Threw the drugs down the sewer drain or the drug dealer?
drugs. I was like, wow.
Well,
what?
Mean, do the cops let him do this?
Well, you know, I found out that they have kind of a mixed reception to him. But I was like, I got to get out there and meet this guy and get out on the street with him and see what he's all about. So I went out to Seattle, and we went out on a Friday night patrol, and it was pretty quiet. Not much happened.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people wanted their picture taken with him. He helped a drunk guy find a taxi cab, but that was about it. The next night, Saturday night.
Always a Saturday, T.
Yeah. It was about 2 or 3 in the morning. We'd been walking around we'd been on patrol for like 6 hours by this point. We stopped to rest at the top of a hill, and we could look down the hill to a parking lot at the bottom. And all of a sudden, we heard a noise. And we looked, and it was a group of about 10 guys fighting, punching each other.
Oh.
One of the guys had thrown the other guy down on the ground and was kicking him. So Phoenix Jones leaps into action. He runs down the hill right into the middle of this group of people fighting, and then he pepper sprays them.
All of them?
Well, I mean,
the
pepper
fighters.
Spray is not an exact science, so he was...
He's just spraying everywhere, right?
Yeah, he sprayed it towards the guys fighting, but kind of just spread like a cloud.
All right, hold on for a second, T. We're at the break. I want you to pick up that story, and then we'll talk about monster hunters as well next. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We're talking with T. Krulos, his works, Heroes in the Night, and Monster Hunters. We'll get into Monster Hunters in a moment. We'll take some of your calls next hour. So, T., Phoenix rushes down. He's pepper sprays these people. What happens?
Yeah, well, we run down the hill after him. And by we, I should clarify, he has a teammate with him who calls himself Ghost. He's also wearing a costume. I'm with him. And this guy named Ryan is along. Ryan is a film student, and he is out hoping to get some interesting footage of real-life superheroes.
I bet.
Which he gets. Phoenix Jones runs down this hill, pepper sprays people, and the situation immediately gets 10 times worse than it was.
Uh-oh.
And it just becomes chaos. The first thing I kind of realize is that these guys that are fighting are Russians, because they all start screaming in Russian.
You don't want to get in the middle of a fight with Russians.
Right. The next thing that happens is there is a woman who is with this group, and she has gotten some of the pepper spray in her face, and she is very upset about that. So she takes off her high heel shoe, and she runs after Phoenix Jones and starts hitting him in the head.
That's like a weapon.
Again.
Ouch!
Yeah. So, and just generally, it's very chaotic, and I'm trying to hang back and see what's going on, but at the same time, I'm kind of scared stupid. I don't want to run away. This group of Russian guys regroups across the street, and then they decide that they're all going to run at us and attack us.
My, so yeah, yeah. He stopped the fight, but now they turned on you guys.
Yes, yeah. So they grab this guy, Ghost, and they threw him into a giant potted plant. They threw Ryan against a brick wall, and one of the guys came up and punched me in the face.
Ouch.
Yeah.
You guys are lucky they didn't have guns.
Yeah, well, definitely, definitely. I said, don't do that. Don't punch me, okay? And then Phoenix Jones kind of ran at them, and he pepper sprayed them again. So they fell back across the street and were screaming at us. And then actually now, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the guys goes to his car.
Uh-oh.
He takes out a coat and walks over to the other guy, and the other guy starts digging around in the jacket pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is really bad.
Yeah,
this guy's
this
going
is not
for a gun.
Good.
So I was watching them very carefully, and I was ready to hit the street, you know. It definitely was a possibility that he could have had a gun, but it turns out it wasn't in that jacket, or he decided he was going to pull it out or whatever. Meanwhile, we're all kind of falling back. We get to the other side of the parking lot, and I see exactly where I want to be standing, which is a little concrete triangle in the middle of the street. And my idea is I can run and stand on this little triangle, and I can see them, and if they start coming for me, I'm going to run down the street as fast as I can.
And how high up is this triangle?
Just, you know, it's one of those things that divides traffic, so it's only like 6 inches tall.
Okay.
But I feel like it's a safe little island at that moment.
Yeah, you feel like you're 20 feet tall.
Right. But then Phoenix Jones comes over and stands right next to me on it.
The guy's a magnet for trouble.
And he says, you know, hey, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I think so. As long as we get out of this alive, I'll be okay. And then I hear shouting in Russian, and I look back towards the parking lot, and the guys are pointing at us and yelling. And then two of the guys go over to an SUV, they get into the SUV and start revving up the engine. And I said, Phoenix, I think they're going to try to run us over with their car.
Jeez.
And sure enough, the SUV comes squealing out of the parking lot. Phoenix Jones runs one way. I run the other way, back towards the parking lot, and hide behind a concrete pillar. this SUV pulls up onto the sidewalk. This is kind of by the marina in Seattle. They get out of the SUV, start throwing rocks at Phoenix Jones.
Jeez, where are the cops here?
Well, this whole time, I had actually called 911 while all this was happening. I was kind of running around the street, and I called 911, and I was a little disoriented because I'm not from Seattle, but
right, so
finally I was able to find a street sign, and, you know, and there's someone else in the group who called 911, too. So, anyway, I'm hiding behind this concrete pillar, and I'm like, these guys are going to beat Phoenix Jones to death, or maybe they're going to stone him to death, and then they're going to come looking for me. But then I hear that sound that is sweet music to my ears at that moment.
The siren.
The police sirens. Yeah.
Did they dissipate? Did they run away?
One squad car pulled up right by the Russians and their crew, and another squad car pulled up right by the marina where Phoenix Jones was. And I saw that, and I came out from my hiding place, ran across the street towards Phoenix Jones and the police car. And the police officer got out of the squad. And the first thing he said, he sees Phoenix Jones, and he says, "I'm sick of playing these games with you."
Oh, he knows him.
Yeah. Most of the police in Seattle know who Phoenix Jones is.
Okay.
And they've encountered him.
Is his face covered, too, like in a mask?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, my God. Yeah, see, that's dangerous. That's dangerous for him.
Yeah.
So off he went. They took him away?
Well, yeah. So the police officer gets out of the squad, and he sees me and Ryan are both there now, the guy shooting video. And he's like, "Hey, are you guys out with this guy?" And we said, "Yeah." He's like, "All right, come here." He goes, "I want all three of you to hear this now. You have the right to remain silent." And I was like, you know, my feelings were a little bit mixed, actually, because I was like, well, this sucks. I'm going to go to jail now. But at the same time, I was like, the back of the squad car is going to be a lot safer than being out here on the street.
I would think so.
But the police officer started talking to us more, and he said, "Hey, where's your superhero costumes?" And we were like, well, we're like media types. And eventually the police were like, okay, well, you guys can just get out of here.
Just go away, yeah.
Yeah. And they put Phoenix Jones in the back of the squad car, and he spent the night in jail. So the squad car pulled out, and then I took my hands out of my pockets, and I realized they were shaking. This shaking so bad, you know, I couldn't control it because I had so much adrenaline just rushing through my system from this crazy experience. But he spent the night in jail. Later in the week, he had a court date. He wore his superhero costume to court. But the judge said, "Hey, you gotta remove that mask." He had four counts of assault against him. But the charges were dropped. But the Seattle district attorney gave him a very harsh statement in court saying, you know, this is a delusion. You are not a superhero. This is dangerous.
It's dangerous for everybody involved, T.
Yeah.
You know, for him, for the people. I mean, I would guess this guy really wants to better the city, you know, and to clean it up. But, you know, that's what the police are for. And, you know, he's going to get in trouble.
I think he has good intentions. You know, I like him personally. I think he's a funny person. I think he wants to help people out. But in situations like that, it was a situation that went from bad to worse in a minute because he was involved.
Well, have you had your fill of superheroes?
Yeah, you know, a lot of them have a much more mild approach than that. Like there's a guy I met here in Milwaukee. He calls himself the Watchman. He does patrols, but I would say it's a lot more like, you know, community neighborhood block watch type thing.
They're not like vigilantes, are they?
No, I mean, most of them don't want to do that because they know that they're not equipped for it.
No.
So, and I mean, the Watchman here in Milwaukee, he's doing next month, or later this month, actually, he's doing a charity toy drive. I think that's a great thing to do. You know, the costume angle is a little bit quirky, But if that is what works for them, then, you know, good for them.
See, I'm thinking of Charles Bronson and those movies he was in where, you know, he was always going out to clean up the city.
Right.
But he was heavily armed. Well, so much for superheroes for a while. But you also got involved with Monster Hunters. Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's something where I loved that topic. When I was young especially, I loved going to the library. I would check out every book that I could about ghost stories, folklore, UFOs, Bigfoot. You know, I read all that stuff. And I've seen a lot of the TV shows, the reality TV shows, and I thought, wouldn't it be fun to get out there and learn how to do this and find out about some of this research and some of the personalities of people involved with it? And then I was like, well, why don't I do that? I talked to my publisher about it, and they were pretty keen on the idea because it's a pretty popular topic.
Sure is. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah.
Look at this show, for example.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I just started searching for interesting people to talk to.
And so, you know, you looked at people who were ghost hunters, Bigfoot chasers, ufologists. Which was your favorite area, or did you like them all?
I liked something about all of them, for sure. I spent a lot of time out there ghost hunting. I found it to be kind of a relaxing hobby, kind of like fishing or something, you know?
Were you a believer in these episodes, Bigfoot, ghosts, UFOs, before you started this?
You know...
And did it change you?
Yeah, I've... the way I kind of describe myself is, I think my head is kind of like a skeptic and a believer standing back to back. And sometimes they work together, and sometimes they don't. You know, I've heard a lot of compelling stories, a lot of interesting, compelling stories. But, you know, journalism is a lot about being a skeptic. And myself, you know, I've always been a little skeptical myself. I'll tell you a story. When I was 7 or 8 years old, I had this uncle who was somewhat of a practical joker. And one day...
I like him already.
We were over at my grandma's house, and for some reason we got on the topic of belly buttons. I have no idea. No idea. And he says, well, you know...
Innies or outies? Well, that doesn't matter.
Something like that. And he says, well, you know, I was born without a belly button. And I was like, what? He's like, oh, yeah, it's true. And then he turns around, and he's, like, pulling up his shirt. But what I don't see is he's also pulling up his waistband. And he turns around. He's like, see, I have no belly button. I was like, wow. And later I told my mom. I was like, Mom, did you know Uncle Lauren doesn't have a belly button? And she was like, oh, he was just pulling one over on you. So what I did that year for Christmas was I found a pink balloon. I tied the end in a knot. And I put it in the jewelry box, and I gave it to him for Christmas. I said, here's a belly button that you can have. But, you know, ever since he did that to me when I was a kid, I've always been a little bit like, I don't know if you're telling me the truth or not.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you some very specific things about the various areas of these monster hunters, and then relay, if you could, a story for us, T. Let's start with the ghost hunters. What was your favorite ghost hunting story?
Oh, well, I found a team here in Milwaukee, the Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee. I wanted to find a team close to home here that I could hang out with over and over again, you know, and get to know them as a team.
Sure.
And do a bunch of investigations with them. So it was so cool because I got to see the insides of a lot of places that no one gets to. Like, we got to do an investigation at the Central Library here after hours. And there's a beautiful theater, the Riverside Theater. We did an investigation there. But their most interesting case, I would say, they frequently take vacation time together, and then they do road trips where they'll hit up some of the famous haunted spots that any paranormal investigator knows about.
All over the country?
Yeah,
okay.
All over the country. It's really cool. You know, instead of going to Disneyland or Hawaii...
Yeah, people have done that, exactly.
Yeah. So on one of their trips, I was able to meet up with them in Kentucky because they wanted to investigate Bobby Mackey's Music World, which is a pretty notoriously haunted location. So that was definitely probably the creepiest experience I had.
What happened?
It's just, you know, and it's so hard to tell. There's so much lore about the place and the things that have happened there.
Was it freaky the minute you got there?
Yeah, I would say so. And especially in the basement. In the basement, and I should say, you know, before I proceed, paranormal investigators in Milwaukee, they are skeptical themselves. They try to take a more scientific, I guess you would call it. You know, they try to get readings on their machines. They try to record evidence.
So they won't believe everything.
No, no, not at all.
All right.
In fact, I would
say that's good. That's healthy, I think.
Yeah, yeah, I do too. And I appreciated that about them. But, I mean, they all kind of had second guesses after Bobby Mackey's because of some of the stuff that happened there.
Did they? Anybody see anything?
Well, it wasn't so much seeing something, but one of their members, Missy, she actually kind of like got picked up and thrown against the wall.
Wow.
And it happened more than once.
Did you witness that?
I didn't witness it, but other members of the team saw that happen.
Was it on video?
You know, it's very, very frustrating.
Darn.
Because they had a video set up, and there's someone standing in the way.
And blocked
right
it.
In the way, blocked the view. But still, you can kind of see her leg moving a little bit.
Was she hurt?
More scared than hurt, definitely.
How far was she flung against the wall?
Just like, you know...
A couple feet?
Yeah, a couple feet. And the people I saw happen say that it looks like, you know, she got pushed against the wall and was, like, pinned there for a second before she fell down.
What happened at Bobby Mackey's? Did people die there? What was the story?
Oh, yeah, it's really a gruesome, gruesome history where the bar, it's built on land that used to be a slaughterhouse.
Oh, no, for animals, not people.
for animals. And you can still, in the basement, you can still see the well. They had a well that they would drain the blood into.
Oh, my gosh.
It's in the basement. And so there's a story from the 1800s about these two men that killed a woman, a pregnant woman, cut off her head, and threw it down this well.
Jeez.
Yeah. And that's where a lot of the stories start.
So they think she's haunting the place?
Both her and the men were there caught, and they were hung at the courthouse, which is not too far away.
And they still hang around there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. And then the unborn baby. I wonder if she's still around. The baby's still around.
Yeah, and then, you know, it kind of had this ongoing violent history where it became a speakeasy type of bar during Prohibition, you know, and who knows what type of violence.
So a lot of strange things happened at that spot.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And they just never went away at all. What's your website, by the way, T?
My website, tkrulos.com.
K-R-U-L-O-S?
Yes.
And T like T, right? T-E-A?
Like, yeah.
Okay, great. Stick with us. We're going to come back. I want to talk with you about Bigfoot, UFOs, and then we'll take some phone calls in the remaining time that we have here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't forget, folks, of course, to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and you can do that by going to coasttocoastam.com. All that information is up there in the far right-hand corner. And don't forget to go to hosts and look at my event calendar, because lots of events starting up in 2016. January, February, we'll tell you about those later on this week.